Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Sings, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was 30 minutes of sweet fuck all. That's what you got this week. Last week, my prediction was that we're going to get yet another kind of just building show, setting things up for the flow that's going to go into WrestleMania. This week was going to be even more of a nothing. Well, guess what? I was bang on. Unfortunately for me, I'm going to make you go sit through all of it. So yes, we're talking about SmackDown over on Washington, D.C., and Monday Night Raw over... Where the hell was Monday Night Raw? Charlotte, North Carolina. And I know there's a whole bunch of American accents. I don't know what they are. How do people from North Carolina sound? I don't know. Born in my mind is like this. I don't know. Anyway, let's jump on over quickly to SmackDown Live because, you know, there's nothing to talk about, really. One of the biggest things, Ricky Starks is now called Ricky Saints. Right. There's the stuff about Miro being gone, but they're not really WWE stories in a way. They're more AEW stuff. And of course, the other shows here will talk about all of that to death. So, you know, listen to our other content. Do it. But I am here to talk about WWE and to watch it so you don't have to. That doesn't mean I'm not going to put you through some shit this week. Because I watch this. I watch these shows. You're going to be hearing about it. So anyway, let's first jump on over to SmackDown Live. 2 hours and 2 minutes on Netflix for me and on USA for them. So let's jump on it.
Priest! Does he have enough left? Salt to heaven! Cover that man! Priest is headed to the Elimination Chamber!
Yes, Damian Priest has qualified for the Elimination Chamber. Kind of has to because he's got to do that match with Drew McIntyre, which internally is kind of being referred to as possibly quite a nothing WrestleMania match. They can do stuff with it where it matters to the characters, but they haven't really done that yet. It's just a bit of Royal Rumble animosity at the moment. Once they hurtle towards WrestleMania, you can start bringing up last year because, of course, Damian Priest cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase at WrestleMania last year and lost Drew his title. So there is a lot of stuff to actually work with here, but apparently internally, they're like, oh, not something very big for Drew, though. But it was Damian Priest versus Braun Strowman versus Jacob Fatu in a big boys qualifying match. It built throughout the night, though, so we'll start at the beginning. Cody Rhodes and Solo were doing that. Our shit, here we go again. His promo decently built the chamber, putting a lot of focus on the winner going for the title that he's currently holding. Maybe telling that there was a CM Punk chance before Cena. Makes sense in this current era, though, like, with Punk being routinely there for the fans to get invested into his character, and in this era, the crowds just want to be invested and have a lovely time. Before transitioning to Sokoa, that Samoan Spike wasn't for me, was all he got to say before the Scottish drums of McIntyre beat. The man wanted his earned respect to not be written off during this WrestleMania season. Like, kind of meta to see the character fighting to stay main event relevant in the face of a nothing WrestleMania mid-card fare. Fatu got a huge reaction for his interruption. His promo style also connecting with the crowd basically immediately, using the moment to tease Big Jacob near the championship. Do you want a little Fatu? Cody addressed him, but as the crowd chanted Fatu on the Titantron, played Solo Sokoa in E17 full white with turtleneck and chain and drove on in. Later in the show, Fatu got to address Solo in the locker room. Sokoa feeling like a former leader as he tried to manipulate Jacob's love for his family to get him back under his side. Honestly, I wouldn't drag this out too long, but if you want to give Fatu a WrestleMania showcase, if you are doing Punk Roman Rollins in the triple threat and you still want to showcase Fatu, could do Fatu solo. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but it'll be that main point of showcasing Fatu. Even if it's in something short, I feel like it's a needed thing. They're going to get behind Fatu for the rest of the year. Why not give him a wee little showcase? And then we swing into the main event, Damian Priest versus Braun Strowman versus Jacob Fatu. Braun Strowman got his to camera and through gorilla entrance. Sorry,
I mean Strowman got his to camera. I'm going to beat him up.
What's he talking about? Blah, blah, blah. What am I doing? What is that? That's a reference to something, but I don't know what it is.
Blah, 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 blah.
Can't think what it is. He's not winning, so yeah, why not? And Washington was up for some mate. Big chargy boys barreling into each other going, ah. Or all gas, no brakes, as Vic Joseph put it on commentary. Given plenty of time for the lads to charge about, yes, of course the end was a run of likely lads interfering. Solo and Cody both got their faces. But we got plenty of time of the dynamic of this match, and it seemed like it was building into that final gear before we got the interruption. You gotta buy the pay-per-view to see an actual closing flow. And even then, we'll screw out of it. We'll tease doing it properly later down the line. But it was a good while till the match broke down. Some great little sequences flowed, such as an old scorning priest halted by Strowman, only for the subsequent fend-off to lead to getting pulled into Fatu's awesome pop Samoan, then straight into a dive to crash Strowman onto the announce desk. Later on, our classic three-men corner powerbomb suplex crash, priest to the outside, needing a minute after that, so Strowman and Fatu could just run at each other for a bit. Jacob no-sold announced desk pain, immediately repeated the earlier replayed Saturday night's main event corner hip charge barrage once again once back in the ring. All hail the chair, no DQ in the triple threat as commentary tells the story of this being Fatu losing his focus and getting to end Strowman instead of just focusing on the win. This time, the reverse scenario, Braun bigging out and claiming, "I for an eye," but his charge never came thanks to a Solo spike. Tama and Solo miscommunicating in their attack on the also interfering Rhodes. The Tongan spiked on accident and Priest took out Mr. Sokoa. Fatu angry distraction with Sokoa got him clobbered into. Back into the ring for a wee power slam tease. Slipped out of and a south of heaven for the win. Cody and Damian celebrating in the win, but they both keep making eyes and looking at the WrestleMania logo. I mean, no. He can be, "Oh, whilst I was in the other place, oh Damian, you took all my moves. You were doing disaster kicks and crossroads. Then he came back and he had to think of new stuff, or suddenly you had a finisher unique all along." But yeah, there's not a lot to go on. And Damian Priest is somebody who's absolutely not winning. But you know, it's good to at least tease it in this very specific period, to at least tease Cody and all of the Elimination Chamber people in something little. Like, we've already seen the stuff with Cody and Punk before the Royal Rumble, so you don't necessarily need to do that here. And it did Cody McIntyre at the start of the show. So, you know, why not do Priest? Just make him feel a bit more relevant in the match, even if he's never winning in a million years. I do like how we still, going into the Chamber, we still don't actually know what the route's going to be. It's the benefit of giving the Royal Rumble to somebody like Jey Uso. The next pay-per-view suddenly also becomes like a massive deal. Like, who is going to win? There is, of course, the route we do CM Punk so you can do John Cena versus Logan Paul, Cody Rhodes, John Cena, so that you can do the triple threat with Punk, Roman, Rollins, and then you have John Cena lose right at the end. Like, there's a lot you can play with. And I like that the Elimination Chamber is just open like this. There's also the threat of the transphobe just hanging in the air. It's like, oh, yeah, we could, he's just there. He's qualified. He's in the match. So there's lots of just different things just existing, which means that the Chamber isn't predictable. Because there's definitely two very, very likely people in Cena and Punk. It's just which one are going to go with. And it could, because it could be either, it just means you do not know who's going to win. They did the same for the Rumble, done the same for the Chamber. And I feel like it's been a really long time where both have been unpredictable. I don't even know. I can't even name a scenario where that's happened. I mean, it must have done, but I just cannot name it. Anyway, let's jump on with the rest of SmackDown, because elsewhere, I mean, sure stuff happened. The other Elimination Chamber qualifying match was Naomi versus Chelsea Green. Trish Stratus was at ringside. I'm sure she's just there for a lovely time with her. Very much the scripted. It's whenever somebody's at ringside and you get them to speak genuinely, biggest giveaway is them calling it a PLE. It's like no normal person is calling them that. But Trish Stratus was interviewed by Barrett because the Chamber is in her Toronto hometown. Speaking of women in the Chamber, Green and Naomi went fast, immediately sounded the "we've got piss all time here" bells. It's like, ah, right. I was expecting like a really quick, I was expecting actually less time than they did get, because we got like 2 or 3 minutes before the ad breaks. Like, oh, we're going to come back and get a similar amount of time, aren't we? Well, we got about double that, so there was enough time in the second half to play it out a bit more. Still not a lot, but it was, you know, a bit more than I was expecting. Naomi gave Chelsea a wedgie before hitting the heat seeker. I'm sure there's some some logic to do with oh, it makes the talk even worse. And I have to shout out production cutting to the side for it to quell the pervs. So like, you still know that she gave the wedgie, however however, you don't then get right up on her ass. Like, production is purposeful. Like, you don't want the audience gawking at it, and you want them to keep following the flow of the match. Just don't film it. It's not that difficult. Here's the example. Cut to the side. It was an angle they used throughout the show as well. They were cut to it quite a few times. But it's just good to have it there. Just a different angle to cut to, so you're not just looking right up there. It's like, yeah, this is what I was talking about the other week. Production is purposeful. This stuff is planned out. The flip off the top rope into the Unprettier had Chelsea not quite landing on her feet for it, but it didn't matter because Naomi was meant to counter anyway, so it fit fine. Like, the flow was all right. Like, Naomi used this new momentum to kick the last before nailing her split leg moonsault. She qualifies for the chamber. Later in the show, we refocused on the Jade Cargill attack from a few months ago. Nick Aldis with new findings. Liv and Raquel were shown in the parking lot on a security camera. We don't know where this feed came from, though. Gives us something to do on a Monday, doesn't it? But it did the important thing and reminded the focus. Okay, so we're going to the WrestleMania gear. This storyline is now coming back in, and some mystery person has submitted this video, and they go over to Monday Night Raw and they attack those people. And you know exactly what beat it's going to be. You just don't know which person did the attack. You just don't know which one they're going to go with. The WWE Women's Championship. Let's just stay on that division. Charlotte Flair watched backstage as the former allies had their title bash. Tiffany Stratton versus Nia Jax. Nia continued her streak of trying new, more difficult shit. Then you can choose whether to commend it or not, as it doesn't come off. It's like, the difficulty bar is definitely higher for this stuff she is trying, but it doesn't work. So it depends on where you fall on that bar. It's like, do you commend her for trying the more difficult stuff, or, but she can't do it. So it was like, well, I've already seen it online, even with, like, within the Social Suspects Discord. People have very varying kind of opinions on this. Powerbomb transition to shoulders meant to roll into a sunset roll-up. Instead, Tiffy wasn't quite able to rotate, leading to Nia falling backwards, then nearly properly bending her knee in the attempt to roll back into the position for the pin. She got there in the end, but smooth, it was the furthest thing from. But we move on. Everything else was grand. The crowds are really responding to Nia's matches. Every time they get fully behind her opponents and really start to react to the bigger lasses' jumps and slams. It's in a please don't win way, but it's not in an expat go away please don't win way. That they are genuinely invested in the story that the two of them are telling. After the break, straight into a picture perfect moonsault to the outside from Stratton, then a picture perfect Swanton. I watch this and think, yeah, absolutely. Tiffy absolutely deserves a Mania Showcase match. The finish, sudden and a nice idea. Going for a sunset flip powerbomb off Brett's rope. The failure led to Tiffy hitting the mat hard and just rolling to the apron, acting all dazed, which avoided the improvised annihilator. Which is quite good. I think it's Nia's facing the other way. She hears the slam, so she knows where Tiffy is. She obviously doesn't hear the roll away, so it lands on her ass. But this is a WWE TV title match, so that's the end of that. Interference time. Candice stopped the prettiest moonsault and swung us into a post-match beating. And oh look, it's Trish Stratus. The legend failed in her attempt and the two got fully downed. Nia on the ramp with a horrifically piped in boo. It wasn't needed. The crowd were reacting. The old habits die hard. Finally, Charlotte Flair strode on out to the beaten down champion, picking up a chair to sit and announce her decision. She chose Tiffy. So we got our chamber focus and we got our women's title match. But those things, like, they only took up about 40 minutes of the show. And I said this show was 2 hours, 2 minutes. So what on earth filled the rest of the show? And I lean in and I go, exactly. What fills the rest of this show? Let's start with the good first. Sammy got a Wii filmed on his phone promo on the plainest, brownest leather sofa, directing our lads to their WrestleMania clash without giving them any return date, kind of, really. Then Kevin Owens, he does his own reply video on his phone from his car, and he directs us into a match in Toronto between the two of them. And I'll go more into this on Monday Night Raw, because Sami Zayn opened the show in reaction to this. They're kind of like tied together, so I'll talk about how I kind of feel about it at that point. Now for the rest of the show. Motor City Machine Guns faced Los Garza, Angel Umberto, making quick work of the Phantasma. Alexa Bliss got to interrupt Nia and Candice backstage so we can get the Wyatt flickers. The answer is yes, my Amazon Echo did turn on. I'll do that. I've cut it out. So you didn't hear that bit. But yes, it did come on. I've got to learn. One day it will condition me and I'll just stop doing it. R-Truth, What's Up Time, led to Mello's next squash win, only after they teased a Mello Don't Miz tag team. Absolutely not. No. Absolutely. I'm not having that pun. Not every pun means that you have to do it. It doesn't matter. No, you can't do Mello Don't Miz. No. Please don't. The United States champion, Shinsuke Nakamura, continued his road to not being on WrestleMania. I'm committing to it. I'm banking on it now. For weeks he's waited. What? For weeks he's been hiding in the shadows. What? No warriors here. What? Absolutely no energy from the crowd to work work with. So LA Knight was the full injection. The Miz interrupted him for one of my most absolute nope matches. Like, are you happy? Are you fuckers happy? I watched LA Knight versus The Miz, and now I live to tell the tale. So sit in. Sit in. But now I get my own back. As I recall it, in full detail, I watched this. No, you have to sit through this. Punch, slow kick, claw on the face on the ropes. Ugh. Argue with the referee. Slow kick, claw in the middle of the ring. Oh, chin lock. Oh, not the chin lock. Oh, yeah, punches back. Yeah. Bash misses head on the announce desk with yeah, yeah, oh, yeah. Shinsuke stare to let Miz immediately get ad break control. Yeah. Fuck it, that's enough for the bit. Snap BFT and the pop-up follow-up elbow for the win. Shin stare down afterwards. Good lord. As soon as they announced about that, and they were like, am I really about to watch LA Knight versus The Miz? No. No. If I'm watching this, I'm doing a bit. Just no. Oh, God. Main event was tons of fun. Big lads barraging about. I'm always down for that. I'm all about that. But you also served me LA Knight versus The Miz, so one of my least favourite shows of the year. Just no. No. This is the guttural reaction of please don't. No, seriously, no, please don't. Like, God damn it. I survived. I'm here today. I can tell you, I'm a survivor of LA Knight versus The Miz. I mean, it was competently, but it's fine. It's competently wrestled. It's just boring. Anyway, let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw. SmackDown, it had the chamber matches. It had a little bit of a setup. More confirmations. It's just, it doesn't feel that exciting to watch. We got confirmations of stuff that we were pretty certain we were getting towards. It's a show where you go, oh, okay, right, yeah. All right, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's nice. But it's 2 hours. My biggest issue with WWE right now. It's like, yes, it makes sense. Yes, it's competent. Yes, you go, oh, that's quite exciting. Oh, that's quite nice. But I'm saying it like that. Maybe because it, like, AEW just is my style so much more. That when I watch that one, I just find it so much easier to get through. Whilst if I'm not making notes, I don't know how easy I'll be getting through these shows. It's piss easy because I'm doing something very active. I'm making notes and things. I even have to pause a WWE show to make sure I'm keeping up my notes so it gets longer for me. That's it. Anyway, speaking of being able to pause and not watching stuff live, Monday Night Raw, it was live on Netflix. I watched the edited version because I am English. I didn't watch the show till Wednesday. A swift 1 hour 50 for the post live stream world. They cut out those bits in between. I don't have to skip the returning in dot minutes. All cut out. 1 hour 50. How many ads are you running? Jesus Christ, it's only 1 hour 50. But the data did come out that it was globally 2.8 million were watching, I think it was last week's Raw. But if I'm right, that was the data just from the live stream. For example, I would not ever be counted on that. I only watched the first one, so I was within that 4.8 million, whatever it was, for the first live stream. But the second one, I'm not included in that. I did watch it on Netflix, but I won't be included in that data because I don't watch the live version. It's an interesting one. It's only 2.8 globally, but I just wonder how many are watching on the non-live stream feed. How many people are me? We go, oh, it's on Netflix, therefore it's pretty easy to get to. I can just watch it whenever. Yeah, I'm a Wednesday Raw watcher at the moment. I chip away at it. So anyway, let's jump on over to Charlotte, North Carolina. And oh, we'll also say, there's a reason it's 1 hour 50 minutes. Oh, there's not a lot on. As soon as I saw it, it's like, oh, yes, this taking up Netflix up on it. It's like, you don't have to do a 3 hour show every week. It's like, yes, take them up on it. If you haven't got the content, don't do it. It's much better to not stretch it out and instead just do what you've got. So let's get to that in a nice swift Monday Night Raw. That was shorter than the SmackDown I watched. Sami Zayn gets his man, Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, set for an unsanctioned match in Toronto. Like, sure, we've seen feuds between these two before, but this is the first time under a creative that actually cares about them and their characters. So Sami opened the show in his unassuming flannel shirt, no pomp as he's held his hurty neck, just whilst the crowd's chanting his name, like, oh, my neck hurts. The man got all amped up to accept the match, but Adam Pearce strode on out to put a stop to all of that and draw the ire for the news of Zayn not being cleared. Sami refused to take no for an answer, refused to leave the ring until he got his match. And a first for WWE in this era. And I don't remember this happening in like any of the John Cena era ever. I swear this must have happened in the Attitude era. Just can't think of it. A match type only AEW has successfully built the animosity to it though in this era. As we fall into the only outcome for a match both men want but the GM cannot sanction. An unsanctioned match. Sami twisting the boss's words around, not being able to protect him. to also pointing that Kevin won't be protected either. Sammy getting huge reactions for this, and it got a huge cheer. But I don't even know the last time WWE put on an unsanctioned match. And I'm interested to see what their version of it is, given that in AEW often means prepare for violence. Prepare for blood. Like the lights out stuff, saying we are not responsible for what's about to happen here. So what is a WWE version of that? Because I swear to God, if it's just a plunder. I've seen that it can build that animosity. It doesn't reach the levels of AEW, because you cannot reach that level of violence. But what does a WWE version look like? How far do they go to push that unsanctioned feeling, if at all? Obviously, so my bottom bar is generic plunder match. So for me, they've got to do is beat that, and I'll be like, you know what, fine. Obviously, if the AEW bar is so incredibly high in comparison, like some of their best matches are their unsanctions, are their lights out. Like, don't go in there expecting a Moxie Omega. There's going to be none of that. No ice picks, no glass on the floor of it, anything like that. Because I think I would say I am more interested in finding out what it is than I would say I am excited for it. And it's all AEW's fault. They've just set the bar so high that I just don't expect WWE to get anywhere close to it. Nor really should they. I think in my mind, the way AEW does their unsanctioned matches, I don't want WWE to try and copy that, because it's AEW's thing. It fits their world so perfectly. Don't really think it would fit a WWE world to kind of turn to violence where you feel uncomfortable. It's a magic place that AEW can take you to, but I don't think that's right for WWE's audience. They just want to be happy and chant the things. They don't want to have a cry. Like the reaction after the steel cage match where Hangman Page just turns around and you just hear a reaction of horror, and that reaction of horror then just makes him have his sudden moment. Like, you cannot do that beat in WWE. It can't happen. You can do it in a manufactured way, but you won't be able to generate the genuine feeling of horror that was there in that crowd. Like, for me, that's just an absolute magical moment, which is unique to that promotion. Obviously, happy to eat my words. I just highly doubt, and I also don't want WWE to be doing that. I like AEW being able to make me uncomfortable. That's good. And I like that WWE is more closer to Marvel in terms of, like, you know what you're going to get. The Elimination Chamber qualifies for Raw. Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor. Backstage, Dom and Liv talked about having to address Finn on bringing in a new member. Finn did his leader pep talk, continued to turn his group against him. So, yay! Judgment Day tensions fully continued with the Priest and Ripley arcs both finished. The match itself was alright. It's WWE TV, so it's never going to be above a certain level. But sometimes you're like, fuck it. And you just load Fortnite and you have an okay time. And that's what this was. Finn's got his unique theme back. Hooray to the Not As Shit Death Reborn remix of a much better theme. Jesus Christ, that new Judgment Day theme is just unmemorable in all the worst ways. The two started off fast and tried to wake up a relatively subdued crowd. New Day did a great job resetting them in the previous segment, but North Carolina was just having a quiet night. Given the time to play out too, they started at a pace and just kept going from there, feeling like a return to quality of main event we were getting before the Netflix era upped the spectacle for a wee while. Like, we finally settled into a groove. We found our median level. The crowd were just enjoying their own fun and chatter though, like getting their phones out and waving them about as production turned up the mic so you could just plainly hear the chatter. Seth, looking out to the crowd, eventually got them to sing his song, which was like a veteran working a crowd perfectly to get them to stop pissing about and focus up again. One flow and frog splash later, and they're chanting, "This is awesome." Like, WWE crowds are so weird. But that is all on Seth. That's all the applause goes to Seth there. They were not invested, they were not paying attention, and he single-handedly just took a second, he just took a beat and got them back on side. Back and forth in the moments as we saw the match swing without interference. The final flow really having them locked in. Coup de grace kicked out swiftly into a crossface attempt, also from Finn. Rollins managing to fight out and flash into a stompy win. Yeah, a good WWE main event. The crowd were knackered and didn't really care, and the rest of the show is kind of why. But it was absolutely fine. Seth Rollins qualifies for the Elimination Chamber. It just feeds into exactly what I was saying this week. Last week's show was very nothing. This week's show was very, oh, okay, yeah, so you are just confirming the stuff that we kind of suspected was happening, but we're just getting it confirmed now. Isn't that an exciting kind of like level of amp to be? Roxanne Perez versus Raquel Rodriguez was the other Elimination Chamber qualifier. Raquel also has a shit new theme. Yay! Like, I'll be honest, it's quite impressive to have this many themes be this forgettable, but it's better than the new Judgment Day theme. Perez got a backstage promo beforehand, but no entrance for you. VTR got her character over, but in the arena she was basically presented as a rookie for the big lass to beat. It's like, almost like this is going to be a squash. They were doing that all on purpose, like everything about the presentation was setting it up to feel like a squash. However, Finn had set up earlier how embarrassing it would be for Raquel to lose. The bigger lass got to toss Roxy into the ring post like a javelin. The smaller lass bumped all over the place for her. Bucklebomb countered, suddenly swung things, almost full squash till then. A few hope spots as the crowd just didn't react, till Rodriguez Strowmaned herself into the ring post, shoulder first, before a succession of dives, and the match turned fully into the big baddie trying to survive. Commentary called, "What a match!" as the tepid crowd just didn't reciprocate any of that. For some reason, that was when Bianca and Naomi turned up for blood in matching cheerleader gear. After all that competitive build, Perez hit Pop Rocks off the distraction for the win. WWE gonna WWE. And Roxanne Perez, the last person to qualify for the Women's Elimination Chamber match. So they're continuing to give her a little push, but there's immediately some WWE-isms kind of stalling momentum a little bit. This was a very weird match to get the crowd invested in Roxanne Perez. The crowd were not responding to the rhythm, and as soon as Roxanne Perez like starts to be competitive, it kind of starts to get them into it, but then there's interference, so Roxanne Perez doesn't win convincingly, even though the entire match was almost trying to 1-2-3 kid her in a way. The video promo got across her cocky character, so he's like, okay, she's a baddie. The match then did the 1-2-3 kid thing, so oh, okay, so she's the plucky underdog. And then she wins off the off the distraction interference thing, so oh, okay. So she got like three different characters within one little bit. Technically, the last bit maybe fits the first one better, but why are you doing it's so strange. It's a very oddly booked match, just in terms of like the whole package. Anyway, onto the other notes. This was easily the most skippable episode of the Netflix era so far, and I didn't have a high review of the last one. Even more nothing than last week's nothing. Gunther did a great mock Jey Uso entrance. Hey, come on guys, do it with me. I want to feel it. Very simple gesture for very simple people. And me performing for you is like reading Shakespeare to a dog. Just continuing slowly walking and talking as it got the crowd around him to just hype themselves into a little yeet. Never once cutting the promo to camera. Always facing the crowd as he told them that it's their fault what was going to happen to Jey at WrestleMania. Eventually got Pat to answer whether he thinks Jey has a chance at WrestleMania. The answer not pleasing our champion. But that called out Jey, and we got ourselves a wee little pull-apart brawl. It was a nice segment. I enjoyed myself. But it's, yes, having a nice little world title little bit, otherwise very, very forgettable. But, it's not going to raise the bar. Women's IC number one contenders match, Dakota Kai versus Ivy Nile. As soon as I saw this being one of the featured bouts for the Vessel of Walk-ins, I was like, this is a light show, isn't it? WWE, just do not put focus on these titles. So if there's focus on these titles, that means there's nothing else to focus on. Oh dear. I forgot how shit Dakota's new theme is. Ivy Nile also got no entrance. And Lyra, a ringside afterthought. Like, woo, title of prestige already. Oh, there we go. That's the stuff. Go to kick for the win after a rope draped neck stompy thing had ref Jessica real world checking Nile was all right, but we are doing Dakota Kai versus Lyra Valkyria again. AJ Styles got driven to the arena by a NASCAR man. I know even less about the cars than I do about the footballs and the basketballs. Complete cultural separation. Nothing, nada. He faced Dominic Mysterio in his return match, winning before getting Bron breakered after his hand was raised, only to dodge and have Dom eat the spear. Cole calling that Bron was embarrassed and humiliated by AJ after the got sent out of the ring, which was a little corny until AJ caught Breaker's tossed ripped shirt without a flinch. It's like, okay, yeah, you pause and you milk that. Like, it's wrestling rules that nothing is more badass than doing an awesome catch. Nothing badass than that. Penta faced Pete Dunne in a bout I completely forgot before and after. WWE's new shiny luchador still receiving great reactions. And New Day got telly time. After the show went off air last week, they attacked poor Ray. I didn't see it until watching this show. I'm not on Twitter. This was the thing I'd missed. I had no idea this attack had happened. Resoundingly booed. They've been basically given nothing since their amazing turn, yet the act continues to be one of the ones with the most heat in the entire company. They got chased off by the LWO. If they continue to be given, not really much at all. So yeah, a very forgettable week. Just last week I was like, okay, so they're telling us where these notes are going. This week they just confirmed those notes. The Monday Night Raw was the most forgettable of the Netflix era. And for me, SmackDown's also on Netflix, so I mentally include those in this. Like, it was the most forgettable show I've watched. I've talked about. It didn't have LA Knight versus The Miz. I'll give it that. It didn't have that on it. Oh, but there's just not a lot going on. It's a lot of nice little bits and confirmations and continued setups. But it's definitely a period where you just not watch the shows. So anyway, that is the end of this week's review. I watched it, so you don't have to. Is that my new catchphrase? So anyway, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week for hopefully better shows. So with that, I bid you adieu. Come on, Trips. Put on a better show. I believe in it. Oh, do I have to wait out to the chamber? I've got Revolution. That'll make me happy. I'll enjoy Revolution. Anyway, With that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number? Oh.
Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.